About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring Earl Waters, and he'll be answering your most important questions about how to get a grand slam in the salt. This show will be 90 minutes in length, and we're broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask Earl a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure you sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Just fill in your name and email address in the form on our homepage, and we'll keep you informed. This broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website within 24 hours after the show ends. So if you have to leave early, you can return to our website at your convenience and listen to the broadcast at any time. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted and is the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc., doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. Recordings or transcriptions of this program cannot be distributed or sold in any form. When we return, we'll be talking with Earl Waters about how to get a grand slam in the salt. Our approach is simple, education. Fly Fusion is unique when it comes to fly fishing magazines. It is one of only a few magazines in North America that focuses on instruction and education. In Fly Fusion, we've covered subjects like short line nymphing, tactics for tough days, stillwater fly patterns, dry fly fishing for fussy trout, and a host of other interesting and educational topics. Visit our website today at www.flyfusionmag.com. That's flyfusionmag.com. And start your subscription to Fly Fusion today so that you can learn all you need to know about fly fishing. Before we introduce Earl, we'd like to let you know about the great gifts we have to give away tonight. For our drawing tonight, we'll be giving away a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and a one-year subscription to Fly Fusion magazine. So you have two chances to win tonight in our drawing. Now, if you haven't registered yet for the drawing, you can do so now. Just go to our homepage, which is at askaboutflyfishing.com, and look for the link under Earl's section that says, click here to register for our drawing. Click on that link, fill out the form, and we'll announce the winners at the end of the show. We will also be giving away a selection of Earl Waters' slam flies. Thanks to Earl, he's offered those up for the show tonight, which is great. And those are tarpon, permit, and bonefish flies that he uses to get his grand slam. So to win that prize tonight, you must be the first person to answer the question we ask at the end of the show. The question will be about something we talked about during the show, and you must submit your answer along with your name and location using the text box on our homepage. So listen closely and use your best typing skills, and you might win that set of flies. Well, our guest tonight is Earl Waters. And Earl has been on our show in the past, so I won't go through a long introduction, but he's got, I think he said, over 300 grand slams to his credit. Now, that's for himself, for his clients, and combined, he's witnessed or participated in that many grand slams. So he runs a guide shop out of Homosassa, Florida, and does work in the Florida Keys as well and throughout the Florida coastline, and does guide services and leads people into these grand slams. So tonight, Earl's going to help us understand how one might get a grand slam. And Earl, hey, welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing.
Well, thanks, Roger. Good evening to you, too.
Well, got lots of stuff to talk about because we're going to talk about three fish tonight, right?
Well, we're going to talk about several different grand slams, but three of them that's certainly close to my heart is the tarpon, the permit, and the bonefish.
Well, let's talk, and we've got a great question here. Don't know who it's from. It came in anonymously, but this will get us started on just that, defining that. He says, he or she, we're not sure which, says, sorry, I don't understand a salty grand slam. There's a local eatery that serves grand slams for about $6 at breakfast time. I can't find a fly pattern for it, though. What is a fly fishing grand slam in the salt?
Roger, that had to be one of my friends, I'm sure.
It probably is, yeah.
Or one of my customers who hasn't been able to catch his grand slam yet, but I guarantee you it costs more than $6 to get that grand slam. But I think he's referring to the one that I had this morning, which was bacon and eggs and a piece of toast. I think that's the $6 grand slam. But one we're talking about probably cost a guy a little bit more than that.
Yeah, I bet. Well, so the one we're talking about, and you said your favorite is, what three fish are we talking about?
Well, we're talking about the tarpon, you know, the permit, and the bonefish, and we're talking about catching those three species in the same day and catching them on fly. That Grand Slam is recognized amongst some anglers and catching them on light tackle, but we're going to stick with the fly fishing end of it. And I think Gary was the next guy who asked a question that kind of we can angle it towards what he asked, and he was wanting to know, were there other Grand Slams other than a redfish, tarpon, and snook? And that is one of the Grand Slams that's recognized in Florida. Florida, state of Florida, recognizes three different or four different Grand Slams, one being the South Florida, which we're mostly talking about, the tarpon, the permit, and the bonefish. And there's one called the Florida Panhandle, which is a spotted sea trout, redfish, and a cobia. And then the other one is, and these are all, you know, fish that can be caught on fly as well. The Florida East Coast is the sea trout, redfish, and tarpon, whereas with the Florida West Coast is the snook, redfish, and tarpon. And all these are all challenging fish in their own rights and takes, you know, different techniques and tactics to catch them, but they are available to most people and mostly with people who have a boat.
Okay, okay. But in the mix we're talking about is one tough character called the permit, right?
Yeah, the permit, Roger, I think eludes more people than any of the species that we're talking about. I recall an angler coming up from the Florida Keys one time fishing with me for redfish on fly here. We weren't trying to do a slam, but they were just trying to catch their first redfish on fly and caught a number of different bonefish and permit in the Keys and tarpon as well. And I remember the angler saying, wow, these redfish are tougher than the bonefish. And that can be the case. All of these fish can certainly present you the challenge. And I don't think we'd be categorizing them in a Grand Slam category if they weren't tough, because the term Grand Slam came originally from baseball. You know, baseball is where it came, and it was kind of a mix with Ted Williams. And then people started talking about the Grand Slam because those were the three species of fish that started in the Keys. Well, everybody that lives in Florida doesn't live or don't have the access to tarpon, bonefish, and permit. So that's where the other slams were established. And, you know, Roger, I think other states probably have their slams too. Not being familiar with every state in the country that has a slam, but I'm sure that each state has what they consider their tougher fish and the three fish they'd like to catch in a day's time. But in Florida, we're talking about four different slams and mainly the tarpon, permit, and the bonefish, and the permit being what most people consider to be the toughest, but not right. Necessarily so. That fish can certainly be accomplished on a fly right along with the other fish.
On any given day, huh? It could be easy or hard.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Kind of like a football game.
That's a fact.
We got Frank in British Columbia. And he asked what parts of the world would be best to fish to pull off a Grand Slam. And for tonight, let's stick with the tarpon, permit, and bonefish. We know we can get them in southern Florida. Are there other places that we could get that kind of Grand Slam?
Absolutely. There's, one place that I've actually have caught a few slams, and that would be down in Mexico, Ascension Bay, down around the city of Pona Allen in the lower peninsula there of Mexico. It offers up some possibilities, you know, for getting a Grand Slam on fly. A number of people contact me from time to time looking for a particular fly or something to go target those fish with. And there's some guides down there that certainly know their way around and know how to set people up on a fly rod, and that's one of the areas. Certainly a few other areas in the Caribbean that it can be done. There's places in the Bahamas that it can be done. You just got to go after those three species where they're most abundant. Sometimes size is quite a bit different. I would say that Florida has the biggest of the three species, that we certainly have the bigger permit. We have the bigger bonefish. Not that you can't catch a 10-pound bonefish in the Bahamas, because it's certainly been done. But for the permit, out of all the places I've traveled and fished for permit, the Florida Keys still provides the biggest permit to date for me.
And I think Belize, too, which is just south of
Belize is certainly popular. Yeah, that's the other side of the bay. When you're going south of Ponda Island, you get into the Belize area, and there's people who wade fish right from the beach and have caught both the bonefish and the permit. The tarpon has a tendency to hold around the mangroves more so, and even during the time of the year that I'm fishing in the Keys for them, the tarpon are usually on a smaller size. Doesn't mean that you're not going to find bigger tarpon, but most of the tarpon, in order to make a grand slam, can be, you know, a 15 or 20 pound fish. He's still a tarpon, and he's still
right.
a fish that can be taken on fly. But you know, you may catch a 100 pounder. But same way with these other places, most of the tarpon are on the. A lot of times, the permit that we're catching are bigger than the tarpon that we're catching.
Wow. Well, I know you said, I didn't get a chance to post it yet. We'll post it when we put up the page for the show. But you had just sent me what was, I can't remember, that was a huge permit. You had a picture of yourself with.
That was actually a picture of a friend of mine, that silhouette, the sunset silhouette I showed you. I've been a friend of mine that was a 30-pound permit. And, of course, I think you're aware that I have a 31-pound on 6-pound test that was a world record.
Right.
A few years back. And they are. They're awesome fish. When you look at a 30-pound permit, you're looking at a big slab of meat.
Yeah, well, that's just it, because they're so tall that they look way bigger than 30 pounds, you know, in my mind anyway. So, like you say, it's a big platter. Beautiful fish. So, well, good, good. Let's see. We kind of answered... I think Harry Spots in Tennessee wanted to know best place to get them in the lower 48. We're pretty much talking about Florida.
Florida's the only place that we can really get them at. If there's any, permit, I'm sure there's some permit off of Texas coast. You hear a few, but you don't really hear of any bonefish. So in order to get the slam, we're talking to the lower Keys, or actually all the Florida Keys is where we're referring to. From Miami South is pretty much the general area that you would target the three species we're talking about.
Right. And then we had a question, which we might not be able to address, but Brian in Portland, Oregon, wanted to know if there's a Grand Slam in Hawaiian Islands. I'm sure there is for the salt. I don't know what to pick.
Well, I think one of them would be a permit, one would be a bonefish, and I don't know if it'd be a sheafish or whatever would be the third fish. There's a third fish I'm sure that they... you know, prefer to. Their bonefish being a little genetically different than ours. I haven't fished, in Hawaiian Islands for any of those species, but I'm sure they do have it, and I do know they do catch permit, and they do catch bonefish there, but the tarpon would be the one in question. I don't think they have any tarpon there.
Right, right, right. As far as the people we've interviewed on the show about the furthest west we've seen tarpon is evidently some that are on the west coast of Central America that must have gone through the Panama Canal to get there. But otherwise, it's pretty much an Atlantic fish from my understanding.
And I have caught them on the west coast of Costa Rica. I have caught tarpon on the west coast of Costa Rica. So that means they are on the Pacific side.
Yeah, yeah. We have Geraldo in Idaho wants to know, does the locale you are fishing dictate the sequence in which you target the three species, or is the sequence always determined by the difficulty of enticing the permit first?
Well, I think a lot of people, and I know that my early approach is certainly different than the way I approach it now. And it used to be a, full bore approach where we did target the permit first, and, you could spend the whole day trying to get that permit, seem like, and actually bypass the opportunity for some other fish and, for opportunity for the other two species even. And by doing that, if you really focus on that one species, you may go home empty-handed that day. And if the permit is one of the three species, and you may not find the other two. But my approach is certainly become different over the years, where when I leave the dock, having a chat with a customer, a lot of times a guy is looking for a slam, and we'll target that in a different way. The way that I like to target it is based on the tide that morning, based on the time that we're leaving the dock. I like to get to the location where we're going to find one of the three species. And even though they're all three species overlap during the tide phases, there is peak times in each one of those phases that you can target the species. So if that morning prevails to stop at a tarpon spot when it's still low light early in the morning, you're going to get a pretty good visual if you see some tarpon rolling, because they're going to break the surface. If you've got some really good moving tide, then you're going to probably want to get out near the outside edges, and this would be either in the backcountry on the Gulf side or either be on the Atlantic side, where you've got some good drop-offs. The one thing that you got to remember about permit is that they got to have deep water access. As tall of fish as they are, they can't be completely exposed out of the water. I have seen them get so shallow that they would actually fall over with their back so high out of the water. But they'd like some fast-moving water, but they'd also like to have deep water access where it's a little channel or a cut. They want to be near that access. So So those things are all part of what determines the fish. But based on his question, no, I don't particularly target that permit. If he's the first fish that we encounter, and we encounter several of those, used to trying to get a slam was just go one fish, then go look for the other one, and then go look for the third fish after that. Now I'll stay with it. If I get into some permit in an area where I'm finding numerous permit, catch one, two, three, maybe catch five or six is possible. And don't leave that spot. Never leave fish to find fish was the motto that I always have tried to go by. And then when you do that, now you can move to another area, maybe find the tarpon, maybe find the bonefish. You may not have to move too far, maybe a little higher up on the flat for the bonefish. And when you do that, now you're able to maybe catch three or four, five or six of those also. Now you're working towards a 3, 4, or 5 day grand slam. You just got to complete it with a tarpon. And it becomes a much simpler mission where you're having fun catching fish and not even realizing that you're targeting, you know, a multiple grand slam. When people think about a grand slam, I'll turn to them and say, well, what about a 3 or 4 grand slam? And they'll look at you like, this is not possible. But it is. My approach makes it very possible, and our success has certainly proven that to where we can get a multiple grand slam, Roger, by doing that. Have fun fishing. Take advantage of that tide where those fish are. Catch more than one of them, and you're on your way to a multiple grand slam.
Well, we need to take a quick break here, Earl, but when we come back, we're going to dig into that more and try to pull a few more secrets out of you here. So
there you go.
Stay tuned. Front Range Anglers, a full-service fly shop located in Boulder, Colorado, provides premium tackle and comprehensive instruction and guide services to fly fishers across the country. In business for over 25 years and with a staff that averages 20 years of experience, they will give you the straight story on gear, places to fish, flies, and techniques. They publish a monthly newsletter that is one of the most informative and insightful electronic magazines in the industry. Find out more about this premier shop by logging onto their website at www.frontrangeanglers.com. That's frontrangeanglers.com. We're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Earl Waters about how to get a grand slam in the salt. If you'd like to ask Earl a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box there to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Well, Earl, before we dig back in there, I'd like to ask you more about what you do and the business that you have. You just mentioned your clients, so we know you're doing some guiding. Why don't you elaborate on the services that you offer and tell us about your websites and so forth, how we can get a hold of you.
Well, at this time, Roger, all I do anymore is strictly guide for fly fishing customers, you know, guiding in saltwater. And I take time off myself to get in some fishing as well, and it's pretty much always fly fishing. But the only guiding that I do anymore is strictly fly fishing. And, of course, sight fishing is my specialty, and I like to see the fish before I cast to it. And that's almost necessary in saltwater fly fishing. So that means I'm going to lean towards where there's clear water. I'm going to fish in areas such as Homosassa, the Florida Keys, some of the other Florida coast that have clear water where we can actually see our fish before we throw to them. And that excites me. It excites me to be able to see the fish and to be able to maneuver across the flats using a push pole and working at a slow pace to where you can pick up all the different movements and telltale signs, whether it's a splash or whether it's birds or whether it's a wake in the water, a push as we call it. Those are the signs we're looking for. And so that's pretty much where I hold my cards. I do take some time out to take photos. I think, you know, I'm kind of a photography addict. I enjoy the photography end of it, and sometimes brutally punish my customers by having them pose for fish when they could probably be fishing, but they appreciate it later on when I send them the photographs I've taken with them. But that's pretty well where I'm at this stage of my life. It's just the fly fishing end of it and guiding.
Okay. And you want to share your websites with
us? They can go to www.earl, E-A-R-L-E, and that's Earl with an E, Waters, W-A-T-E-R-S, .shutterfly.com. So it's just earlwaters.shutterfly.com.
Okay, great. And I'll make sure if we don't have, I'm not sure which one we have on our site for you here. Let me just check here. Because I know we have a link to your site, but it might be the backcountry. Homo Sassa Fishing.
Yeah, they can also find me at backcountryconcepts.com. They can also find me there. That site's a little outdated. I think most people enjoy the calendar and the photos that I've got on the Shutterfly
site.
Right.
Good, good. Okay, good. Well, let's dig into some of these questions. I know we have a question here from Don in Bozeman, and then we also have a question from, and this one came in on the Internet, from Mike in Evergreen, Colorado, both asking, is there a best time of year for a Grand Slam in South Florida?
For me, it's the month of October, early November. There is a lot of people who will attempt the Grand Slams in April. The springtime in April in the Keys is very good. You can expect to get a lot more wind maybe than what you'll get in October, November. A lot less people in the Keys then. Plenty of fish around. No complaints on the number of permits. Permits are mainstay. I target permit more so than any other fish. Not necessarily going to slam every day, but I do fish for permit every day during that time period. And if a slam comes together, if a guy wants a slam, we can usually go find a smaller tarpon and also find some bonefish and sometimes find some very good bonefish. The Lower Keys is where I fish out of. I fish out of Big Pine mostly. I will go as far as Key West, and there's times that I'll trailer to Key West and fish out of Key West in order to fish the Marquesas. But most of the time, I'm running the boat out of Big Pine and going maybe, you know, sometimes as much as 30 miles, which puts me in Key West by boat. But normally, if I go to Key West, I am going to trailer that far. But I do fish the ocean side and the backcountry side, you know, based on our winds and based on our tides out of the Big Pine area. But I really like the October time. My customers seem to like the change of weather. April's pretty much the same kind of weather, other than you can just have a lot of wind during that time. But it doesn't mean you won't catch permit, because those windy days certainly can produce permit for you.
And I have a question came in on the Internet here from Jerry in Tampa. He says, have you figured out a way to keep the tropical storms and hurricanes away during the dates that I schedule my trips?
Boy, you hear more and more of that all the time. You know, I have a lot of fishing guide friends who tell me, you know, they feel like they're starving to death because of the change of weather and all that we're having. And it's just not as predictable as it used to be. And I guess this is a sign of the times. But it can certainly be tough when a guy has only got a few days to spend, you know, chasing his quarry and in his favorite place, and he's had to travel to get there. And I'm always amazed at the guy who books one day and the other guy books a week, and that guy, he catches, you know, a grand slam or catches his fish of a lifetime on this one day, and the poor guy that's booked a week, he's struggling, you know, the whole time. But that's just fishing, and that's what draws us back to it from time to time and keeps the fishing guides busy, I guess.
Along those lines, down in the Keys, I don't know about Homo Sassa, but and maybe you could talk about that too, since that's one of your, you know, home fishing grounds. But down in the Keys, from what I understand, even on a pretty lousy day, there seems to be some place to go that's a little calmer because of going through to the Gulf side or over to the ocean side or around the mangrove or something. But is that true? Is it? Are there,
you know, Roger, I've run as much as 30 miles. I've run as much as, you know, an hour at times to switch sides from the ocean side to the Gulf side, you know, because of the wind direction maybe changing. There is places that you can certainly tuck into and find fish. I don't know of any place. Some of my best permit fishing comes from a place that east wind that I can tuck in on the west side of it, and seem like the permit like to tuck in there too. I don't know of any days that I've fished that I can't get to a place where we can get out of the weather, if there's any kind of weather coming up, particularly in October. We're going to have more good days than bad days, but I remember spending one April in the Keys where out of 30 days, we had 22 days of wind that was over 15 miles an hour, and that's brutal on the fly fishermen, and you just have to pick your areas that you can tuck into. The Lower Keys do offer, particularly the Big Pine area, does offer a lot of mangrove shoreline, a lot of protective area, such as the Upper Keys. Once you get to Key West and get out in that open water, there's not a lot of protection in Key West, you know, out of the wind. So you pick your days. You pick your days to go out of there and fish those species. But like I said, permit really don't care if the wind's blowing 10 miles an hour or 40 miles an hour. It's just a fly fisherman who struggles with that.
Right, right. So practice on windy days before you go.
Can't do enough of that.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm sure there's other people wondering this. if a person goes down there, and as I always recommend, whether you're going to Alaska or Florida or wherever, you know, get as many days as you can afford because you never know. But if you book, you know, 5 to 7 days, then you're bound to have a couple of good days in there somewhere. But if you were, and maybe you can speak to your policies and or what other guides might do in Florida, if you were to go down and you come down to the dock and the weather is just too horrendous to go out, are you expected to pay?
I give my customers the option to cancel that day at the dock if the weather doesn't seem like it's going to be safe for us. And there's a difference between wind blowing and being safe. Safe meaning if there's the only thing that makes it unsafe, anything short of a hurricane would be lightning, if lightning is happening. The nice thing about the Florida Keys is because of the narrow piece of land or the land that runs from the upper Keys to the lower Keys, that large body of water, narrow body of land, it allows storms to build and pass pretty fast. They don't normally blanket you for long periods of time. So if you have weather in the morning, you may not have it in the afternoon. You may be able to get out by the middle of the day. And that's what makes it nice, that you can move from either side sometime to get away from some of these storms that are passing through. If you've just got a really bad storm that's moved in and it looks like it's not going to clear out, then I always certainly give my customers that option. What other guides do, I'm not really sure about, but I give them the option to call it that day.
And then reschedule or something.
Yeah, in a lot of cases you got guys coming from a long ways away and they have nothing else to do. And so you try to pull it off to where it's maybe someplace close by. Sometimes I've caught some great fish in the canals on a really bad day, go in the canals and catch baby tarpon. And you can be assured that they're going to stack up in those, you know, residential canals and have actually been part of a grand slam. Even this past October, some of our grand slams were accomplished by fishing in a canal.
Jerry, who asked a question earlier about the other, you know, the redfish, tarpon, snook grand slam, part of it, I kind of divide up his question, but his other part of it was that he fishes over in Naples, Fort Myers, and he mentioned the canals, which you just mentioned, along the Tamiami
right.
Trail.
Mm-hmm.
And he's asking about tides and is wondering whether the early morning tide or the late afternoon tide provides a better opportunity.
You know, the tide is very important to me. It's not a matter of morning. It's not a matter of afternoon. It can be in the middle of the day. I've had some of my, you know, as good a catch as any catch right in the middle of the day, right 12 o'clock noon. I've been able to catch all three species. The bonefish being a little more sensitive to water temperature, and if the water's, you know, really warmed up quite a bit, you may not see him during the middle of the day. But the permit and the tarpon have a much broader temperature range. The permit seems to have a very broad temperature range where he'll be on the flats. The only reason a permit may not be on the flats is because the food source is not there. Crabs being his mainstay of food, if the water temperature is too high for the crabs to be up on the flats, the permit's not going to be there either. He's going to be where the food source is. And that goes for all species. They're going to be where there's a food source. They're not going to venture too far away from a food source, particularly when your water temperatures are in the high 70s and low 80s. All three of those species are pretty comfortable in those kind of water temperatures. So they're going to be where the food source is. Once they've got the right water temperature, they're going to be looking for a food source.
And you said the bonefish particularly doesn't like the warmer water up. It's too warm, is that?
Well, no, it can get too cold for them, but it can also get too warm for them as well. Those temperatures get up pretty high. The bonefish would not show himself out on the flats during the middle of the day. He's going to be off into a little deeper water where the water temperature is a little cooler, closer to the bottom. He's going to leave that flat. So you're going to do him in an early morning and a late afternoon. That's where you're going to find that bonefish. And so your tides are important. He's going to want a moving tide just like the permit. He's going to want, you know, to be in an area where there's water flushing across the flats, which also makes the water a little cooler. He's going to be looking for his food to be swept to him or work down a shoreline where he can, you know, where he can find various crustaceans. So he's going to be on the move. When you are finding bonefish that are going to eat your fly, in most all cases they're moving. You'll find a few laid up fish from time to time, but you're going to find them moving.
Okay. Question from Mike in Boise, Idaho. Earl, do you ever use moon phases to time your saltwater fishing trip?
Absolutely.
Yep.
That new moon and that full moon, they're going to produce the most water movement. There's going to be the most exchange of tides. You're going to have your high highs and your lower lows. And both of those moon phases, of course, are going to be the ones. If I have a presence, it's probably our preference. It's going to be the new moon over the full moon, but they both produce extremely good water, and all three of those species can certainly be active in that, more so the permit and the bonefish. The tarpon that time of the year are hanging around the mangroves. The only advantage to a falling tide with them is it's going to bring them from out underneath the mangroves. About midway through the fall of the tide, they're going to start dropping along the edges of the mangroves where you can actually see them. You can hear them up in the mangroves on the high tide, but you don't particularly see them, and you're not going to be able to catch them if you can't get a fly to them. So they'll start moving out, and then when the tide gets out completely low, they'll move completely away from the mangroves, and that's the time where we're going to see less permit is when all the water's off the flat. And so the tarpon are going to make themselves more available to us as far as being able to see them, and they may be in a foot or 2 feet of water just off at the edge of the mangroves in the open water to where you can see them. And that's a good time to find bonefish, too. Bonefish will be more visual, during that low water stage and still be up on the edge of the flat. There is places that bonefish will not even show up until midway of the tide. The bigger bonefish sometimes don't even make themselves present on a flat until the tide's really gotten up. Other places, they'll move in with the tide and make themselves very visual by tailing or pushing up on the flat and pushing a wake to where you can actually get a visual. But usually those fish are moving pretty quick, a little harder to target unless you can be right in the right place. And some people like to chum for them to try to hold them a little longer. Gives them a few more opportunities to cast, and that certainly is a productive method. Chumming for bonefish and fly fishing is certainly something you see a lot of in the Keys.
A question came in on the internet that involves forecasting, but not weather forecasting. Barry in Memphis says, "What's your tarpon fishing forecast for Homo sassa next?"
Well, that's probably Barry May is who that probably is. Barry gets the same forecast from me every year. Barry, you're not going to catch them unless you show up. I wish I could predict such things, but they're here every year in some kind of numbers, but just maybe not the numbers that we always want, but the size is always better than any other place I fish for tarpon. The biggest tarpon, that I've ever encountered and caught has certainly been right here in Homo sassa, so...
But in Memphis, the tarpon fishing's lousy in Memphis.
Yeah, it is. It is lousy, but Barry's got a really good job there, so...
He can afford it, huh?
But he's still looking for that other home, I know. He's still looking maybe to move into Homo sassa one day, so he's been doing a lot of shopping for a few years, so...
And just so folks know, we did do a show with Earl on Homo sassa tarpon, the big giants that inhabit that area, so you'll want to catch that, too. In fact, we've done other shows on permit, bonefish, and tarpon throughout the world, so check in on our archive to find out more about those. But, Earl, when you spend some of your time in Homo sassa and then some of your time down in the Keys, are there particular months that for people in case they wanted to book your services, are you in one place during a certain period of time?
Yes, I do spend the whole month of October and sometimes right into the 1st of November, depending on the weather, the conditions of the fishing. But I do book a season in advance to spend the whole time in October. I provide a place for the customers to stay. They stay right in the house with me, and we eat, sleep, and fish right out of the same location. It's just a package deal to where... I have someone there to do the cooking for us in the evening, and we have a nice place to sleep and not far from where we're going to fish each morning. We never have to make more than a 20-minute run to our first fishing spot in the mornings. So I do provide that service in October, early November. I don't do the springtime anymore. I used to do that, but because there's other places that I want to be as well, I don't do the April time. And then I'm just all over the place after that point. I spend some time now over near New Orleans, fishing the redfish over there on fly as well. Become a very popular area and very productive fisheries over there. And then the rest of the time, I'm right here at Homo sassa fishing. I make a few trips up to places like Tennessee, North Georgia, do a little trout fishing, but that's usually kind of more of a vacation than it is a working deal. I don't guide for the, for trout, but I do guide, at all the different spots in Florida that I enjoy fishing are all sight fishing areas. So
yeah.
But the Florida Keys is certainly a place that's close to my heart. I do enjoy the time I spend down there, and I do spend, like I say, the whole month of October chartering down there. I may go down for short trips from time to time with friends, but that is the time that I charter.
And it, what part of the Keys are you working out of?
Big Pine. Big Pine Key is Pine? The lower Key. That's 30 miles from Key West. That is the area that I'm working out of.
Okay. Again, we need to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll talk with Earl more about how to get a grand slam in the salt. Housatonic River Outfitters offers the finest in fly fishing products in Connecticut and fly fishing guides on the Housatonic, Farmington, and other waters. You have the option of wade fishing trips or drifting the river with their guides. In addition to the spectacular trout fishing, they offer guided fly fishing trips and spin fishing trips for warm water species. Please tour their website at www.dryflies.com. That's www.dryflies.com to view their fishing products and guide services that they offer in Connecticut and Massachusetts. They were the first fly shop in Connecticut to offer drift boat guide services and have the largest established guide service in New England. To learn more about Housatonic River Outfitters, visit www.dryflies.com. That's dryflies.com. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with Earl Waters about how to get a grand slam in the salt. If you'd like to ask Earl a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use that Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And I'm just checking. We've got a couple. One just came in, Earl. Before I get to this one, I want to ask you one question, because we were talking about guiding. Obviously, all our people won't get to go with you, potentially, but being schedules or, you know, that kind of thing. What are some key questions our listeners should ask a guide about, you know, if they're going out for tarpon, permit, bonefish down in Florida? What are some of the key questions they might want to ask to make sure they're getting a good guide?
Well, I think that... you know, I fish with a lot of guides when I go to another location. I like to do my research on the internet to see who's getting the most press and who seems to be the most knowledgeable, that's mentioned the most in that particular area, and then contact that person and see what it is that they're offering. Of course, find out what their scheduling is, and then if their schedule doesn't work with my schedule, then I'll ask them for a recommendation of someone that they work close with. I certainly let them know ahead of time, you know, what it is that I'm wanting to accomplish and find out if that fits into their realm of style of fishing. I'm a sight caster. I'm a fly fisherman, and I want to be able to fly cast. If a guide is not familiar with fly fishing, if he doesn't fly fish himself, he's probably going to struggle at setting you up for it, and it's going to be a little frustrating for you and him. If he is a fly fishing guide, then I want him to tell me what it is that he targets in his area, in the time of the year that I'm going to be there, that I've chose to fish a particular species. Are those available to him? Is that a fish that he is targeting? And how is the fishing at that time? You know, those are some of the things I'm going to ask him. But in his experience is going to show me within a 5-minute conversation on what his experience is and what his capabilities are. The type of boat that he's got, you know, does he have a flats boat? Is he set up for a fly fisherman with a boat that's got an open area where he can, you know, strip line into a basket or into an open cockpit? Does he furnish any flies in case I don't have the right flies? You know, just those type of questions are the things that, what do you provide? You know, what do you provide and what do I need to bring? You know, what weight rod do I need to bring? A lot of times will be the question for an angler going to an area where you might think you know what you need. I think somebody even asked that question in our questionnaires here. You want to know in advance what you need to bring and what you don't need to bring. Some people don't even bring any fly rods at all. They want to use my stuff. And it's nice to know that your guide's got a backup. If I break my one rod that I'm bringing with me on this trip, are you going to be able to provide me with a backup? That's an important thing. You don't want to be in the boat without a fly rod.
I know, and it seems pretty obvious, but like you said, ask if they're a fly fishing guide. Ask what kind of boat they have. And you might think that that's pretty, you know, pretty obvious question or something you might just assume. But I know one of the guides up here in Colorado took on the challenge for himself to write an article from the perspective of someone that doesn't ask all the right questions but just kind of goes with the flow. And so he made a random call down to a place in Florida and booked a day on a boat for him and his wife. And he didn't ask, you know, if it was fly fishing or if the guy fly fished or whatever. He told him what he was doing, but he didn't really ask the guy, you know, do you fly fish? You know? And the guy goes, oh, yeah, I take fly fishers out and blah, 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 blah. So they went down there. Guy didn't fly fish, didn't know how to position the boat for fly fishers, couldn't help his wife, who was new to fly fishing. So the experience was lousy. It made for a good magazine article, but
well, you know, Roger, it also does, and something came to mind, it doesn't hurt to ask for a reference to. When you call a guy, you know, just, hey, can you refer me to someone who has fished with you before that I can chat with?
Right.
And if somebody asked me that, I would certainly be more than happy to give them a list of names of people I knew that it would be fine for them to contact.
Right.
It would tell them the facts on what they can expect, you know, fishing with me. Personality-wise, you certainly don't want to be in a boat with somebody all day long that you, you know, can't get along with, that you,
right.
that you certainly, you know, that's crawling down your back or whatever, or hollering at you when you're making a, you know, bad cast, or you certainly don't want a guy that's so passive that he's about to fall asleep back there that's not paying attention to what you're doing either to
right.
help encourage you or to direct you into what he sees or what he might know. Everyone has their local knowledge, and that's valuable information. That's why I want to find the very best guide I can when I go into an area for the first time, is I want to tap his knowledge, because he's going to know things I don't.
Right. One of the other things you brought up that I think is real important is, I think as a general down in the Keys, general rule down in the Keys, is that a lot of the guides will provide all the gear, flies, rods, everything. But in other parts of the world, they provide absolutely nothing, and there's no
that's
place
right.
to go get it. Right?
You better be prepared. You better be prepared for that.
Yeah. You got to make sure you know what you're in for there. Well, one question came in on the internet here. Michael in Northridge. I don't know where Northridge is, but he says, "Have you fished Ascension Bay?" Which you said you have. If so, what differences do you see between the areas regarding permit?
The numbers
there and Florida, where you're fishing.
Yeah, the numbers are good in Ascension Bay, and can be some fairly sizable fish. I haven't fished Ascension Bay in some time, but I did fish the Ascension Bay Bonefish Club when they first opened up, and did some exploratory fishing with them down there when they were trying to discover some of the new places for the fish. I don't think the permit overall are as big as the permit in the Florida Keys. I don't think they're any easier to catch, but their numbers are good. I recall following a fish for 3 hours, almost seemed like following one big fish, trying to get set up to get him to eat the fly, and he was just stubborn and didn't want to eat the fly. I kept encountering. We were looking for other fish, and we'd go down a ways, and there he was, same fish again. He moved down the shoreline from us, and we'd be pulling down, all of a sudden bump into the same fish, and I recognized the fish because he had a little spot on him, his back, that's not normal for a permit, and I could tell it was the same fish I was encountering. But he had his mind on something else. He was feeding and had his mind on something else. And you can certainly find good numbers of bonefish there. The bonefish are on the small size. You're not going to find the quality of bonefish size-wise that you find in the Keys, but you're going to find good numbers. You got some good quality water, you got some good guides down there. You fish out of pangas, fish out of bigger boats, and sometimes they got to cross a bigger body of water, and it works fine. But the guides work hard at pulling those boats, and you can get out and wade fish there in a lot of areas too. The tarpon are going to be less numerous, but the bonefish and the permit will make up for the numbers.
Okay. All right, let's get into the overall game plan. Now, you've kind of addressed this in a number of areas already, but let's just say that I'm your new client. I've never been down to try to get a Grand Slam. What is the game plan? How are you going to ask me to prepare, and then how do you prepare for that day out? And then maybe kind of walk us through the day on
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I want to talk to you about your tackle first. You know, Roger,
okay.
I want to know what you're going to what it is that you have to bring, and then of course I want to quiz you on the fact that if you break a rod, are you willing to use my rod? Because some people are really adamant about using their equipment and nothing else, but I think most people are certainly willing to change or to use the guide's rod if there's, you know, became unserviceable, where they got pulled out of their hands, dropped overboard, or whatever. And we want to take some attention to your tackle. I like to see people show up in the mornings with the rod already assembled, with the fly reel on. I want to talk to them in advance about what they should bring in the way of a fly line. You know, where they're, once we talk about the size rod, we want to talk about the fly line. And I want to make sure the reels are reels that's going to hold up to high-speed fish that are in good working order. These are things that I try to talk about to you before you come so that you don't have to scramble when you get here. And then I let them know that they don't necessarily have to go out and purchase all new equipment, you know, for the first trip. They should try my stuff out, because they may not even enjoy that type of fishing. They may find that it's not the challenge, or maybe too much of a challenge for them at that stage of their fly fishing skills. Eyesight's very important in sight casting. And if a guy doesn't have the skill, he may become very frustrated, and he spent thousands of dollars for fishing tackle that he no longer, you know, cares to use because he just couldn't meet up to the task of being able to sight cast. It is probably the most demanding of all fly fishing, and saltwater fly fishing is very demanding, particularly sight casting, where you're looking for fish that blend to the environment very well, particularly the bonefish. Permit are awful difficult to see at times, too. A small tarpon can be a very difficult fish to see when he's laying up on some dark bottom. So all these species, you know, have their ability to camouflage themselves to the point to where a lot of times people don't see them. And other species sometimes can confuse a guy. He'll be looking at a bonefish thinking he's looking at a barracuda or a shark, and it turns out to be it's just the biggest bonefish he's ever seen. So talking to them about their tackle and how to prepare before they come, and talk to them about, are you tying your own flies? Have you bought flies that you want to use in this area? Because in most cases, the guide's going to want you to use his fly. Your better guides are going to have the flies down pat to what these fish eat. And I'm always willing to try something new. I look in your box when you get here that morning before we leave the dock. I see something that looks interesting, maybe inviting to the fish. Then I'll let you start out with your fly, put your fly on first, and see how it does. And then, you know, work around that. But having the right tackle, having the right line, and having the right reel is very crucial when you're fishing for these species.
Okay, now when we're talking about equipment, and then we can move out, you know, into the water here. But there are some questions we've had on equipment here. Frank in British Columbia again, Lanceville, British Columbia. Could a grand slam in the salt be accomplished with one fly and one fly outfit? And we had some other questions about, could you use one fly? Lane in Plant City, Florida asked the same thing. Could it be done with one fly? So talk more directly about the equipment. Should you have three different kinds of rods and reels, different weights?
Well, preferably a 7 or 8 weight rod is certainly suitable for the bonefish. The permit being the bigger of the species, a 10-weight rod certainly is more in line for that. When you're talking about fish that are 20-plus pounds, a 10-weight delivering the size, the fly predicts a lot of what we do in fly casting. We're using some fairly large flies for the permit. These flies are weighted. When we're fishing 5 feet of water, we're using a very fast-sinking fly. We're fishing 2 feet of water, we're using the same fly with less weight on it. We're using a barbell weight on the head of it, so it sinks down in front of the permit very fast in that swift water. So I use 3 different size weights on my flies, but I normally will always use a 10-weight on the permit. The last thing you want to do is have a 7-weight rig with your permit fly and encounter a 30, 40, or 50-pound, you know, permit. You're going to feel really undergunned, and you are going to be undergunned. And if you do hook that fish, you're going to be in for a long battle. That more than likely, if you do land him on a 7 or 8 weight rod, a 30-plus pound permit, great accomplishment, but you also have probably killed the fish too because of the time that it's taken to do it. You can certainly fish the different line class sizes in any of those rods, but you're going to find that with the really light tippets on a heavier rod that you're going to break more fish off. A 12-pound tippet to a 20-pound tippet for the guy who is not trying to break any records is certainly ideal for the permit on a 10-weight. The 7- and 8-weight rods are ideal for the bonefish. The 8-weight rod can certainly be suitable for the smaller tarpon, and the 10-weight rod can handle just about any tarpon that you encounter in the Florida Keys. So if you're going to show up one rod, you're going to be handicapped. And if you're going to go to the effort of hiring a guide and going into a body of water where you have the opportunities of all three species, I certainly would have that. If budget is a problem, you want to put your money into your trip and have an extra day fishing, then the guide, in most all cases, is going to be able to supply you with equipment. It just needs to be your ability to wherever you can adapt to whatever he has to cast, meaning that your fly fishing skills should be sufficient enough that you can switch from a 10-weight to a 9-weight to any brand rod. If you've learned to fly class properly, the brand is really not going to matter. You'll compensate for a slow rod or for a fast rod, you know, based on what your experience is. You should be able to compensate for any change in the way of a rod.
Yeah.
Reels are going to be preferred right hand or left hand. Most all guides are going to carry right and left-hand reels in their boat to suit their customers' needs. I certainly, you know, I've got both supplied and ready to go.
Well, back to the rods. If you were only going to have two rods, it sounds like maybe an 8 and a 10 weight would be
eight and a 10 choice. Would be, if you're going to have two rods, an 8 and a 10 would certainly be my choice. Yep.
Okay. And then line, you were just going to talk about line.
Yeah, floating fly lines or sink tips can certainly work good. Full sinking lines or shooting heads are not as desirable, even though sometimes you're working in some pretty fast current. The problem being is that the weight of the fly will actually get it down enough. If you need to make a second cast, you need to reposition your fly, you're not going to be able to do that very quickly on a full sinking line. You can do it with a sink tip. A 10-foot sink tip certainly would work, and it certainly has its place in it. I would say 90% of the time we're always using a full floating line, and I even like the clear floating lines, but it makes it difficult sometimes for the customers because they're not able to see the fly. You know, they need to see the fly line to follow to that. And in that case, we just, you know, we'll use a 10-foot, 12-foot, or even maybe a 14-foot leader if the fish seem to be responding to the line itself. Now, I myself do not use any carbon, fluorocarbon lines. I strictly use mono lines. I like the knots. I like the way knots that I use cinch down on regular mono instead of fluorocarbon. But I know a lot of people have confidence in a fluorocarbon and can use that. I just don't use it myself.
Okay. And then we can get into more detail on specific flies, but the question from Lane about if there was one fly pattern to pursue all the fish, is there one that you could do?
Well, you know, the crab pattern is certainly my choice. I use a crab pattern for the tarpon. I use a crab pattern for the bonefish, and I use a crab pattern for the permit. I catch a lot of bonefish on the permit pattern, sometimes even with a heavier weight. With the bonefish, normally I am not putting any weight on the bonefish fly. If any, it'll be very, very little. The weight of the hook usually takes it down to the bonefish in shallow water. But sometimes you run into these bigger bonefish in 2 or 3 feet of water, and if you can make the proper presentation, give them a little bit of lead time, you can go with a little faster sinking, you know, permit fly. There's been times when I had an angler on the bow using a 10-weight rod, and we're looking for permit, and all of a sudden a big bonefish shows up. And I wouldn't hesitate to cast that fly to him without any problem. The permit fly with heavy weight with the tarpon, typically you want to bring it in, you know, front of him, a head-on shot in front of his nose, keeping the fly at his level and slightly above is ideal. And that's hard to do with a fast-sinking permit fly that's intended for, you know, fast current and to get down in front of the fish very quickly. That fly is probably going to sink a little too fast. But if you're lucky and you make the right presentation, you can make it work for that tarpon, too, in a pinch. I mean, there's been times that the tarpon just rolled up on an 8 as soon as it hit the water, and that was good for us because a second later and the fly was going to be sitting on the bottom and he wasn't going to come down on it.
Okay.
If you see the tarpon coming in time enough and you put it down in front of him, lay it on the bottom, you can strip it up off the bottom by lifting the rod tip and making a strip and sometimes get a strike that way. But sometimes that fast movement is not what they like. Even though I do use a smaller pattern of a fly, I mean of a crab fly, you know, for the smaller tarpon, it's much smaller than my permit fly. But I still use a crab fly. Everything, you know, that we're, all three species certainly eat crabs, and
right.
That's certainly the preferred one for the permit. So, yes, he can catch all three species on a crab fly, but he probably won't catch them all on the same crab fly. He's going to need to have variances in their sizes. Very important to have variable weights when it comes to your crab patterns for permit as well. And, of course, the bonefish. The reason for the bonefish is that we don't do the heavier weight is because they're spooky, and the splat of that heavier fly can certainly send them off the flat if you present it to them too close.
Well, we've got to take another quick break, but when we return, we'll talk to Earl more about getting a grand slam in the salt. Captain Bob Jaspers of Flats Time Charters will introduce you to the Mosquito Lagoon, Indian River, and No Motor Zone of the Banana River on the east coast of Central Florida. Only a short drive from Orlando, you will sight fish for big redfish, spotted sea trout, and black drum, as well as the seasonal snook and tarpon. Captain Bob is a lifetime resident of the area, and it shows in his knowledge of the local fish, flora, and fauna. Call Flats Time Charters now and arrange your next memorable adventure. You can reach Captain Bob Jaspers at 321-631-4051. That's 321 631-4051, or go to his website at flatstime.com. That's FLATSTIME.com, flatstime.com. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Earl Waters about how to get a grand slam in the salt. If you'd like to ask Earl a question, just go to our homepage at AskAboutFlyFishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Well, we did get, actually, this person sent in a couple of questions, but one that is still relating to fly lines. You've kind of answered parts of this, but since Leng is in Abu Dubai in United Arab Emirates, I feel we need to answer his questions because he's coming a long way with them. And I'm wondering what kind of flats fishing they have over there. Maybe he can write us and tell us. But he says, when fishing on the flats, high winds are often a challenge to overcome. Apart from getting the boat in the right position and direction, what other lines do you use from the usual shooting headlines in assisting an average fly guy who can manage about 40-foot casts at the most?
Yeah, I'd still stay with that floating fly line because he's going to really have a difficult time with that shooting head and sinking line. Shooting head certainly did cast a long ways, but he's going to be probably throwing further than the fish with that shooting head. He's going to have a hard time holding it down to 40 feet. If he's only throwing a shooting head at 40 feet, then he just needs to, get in some more time and practicing. Get out there and use that fly rod and put it in a position to where he's very comfortable with making a 40-foot cast is certainly an adequate cast, but can you do that 40-foot cast now, or does it take four or five or six, false casts to get it 40 feet? That's the difference. Those fish aren't going to give you the time to sit there and make a bunch of false casts, to get it 40 feet. If you can do 40 feet right now, meaning one back cast and one forward cast, which you can certainly do on a shooting head, my fear would be that if you're casting properly, you're going to overshoot 40 feet real easy with a shooting head. And then if you need to reposition that fly because you didn't hit your mark, you're going to have to strip a lot of line back in, to get that shooting head going again. If you do a roll cast, you're going to be slapping quite a bit of water in front of you trying to do that roll cast, and you're going to probably send those fish in the opposite direction and not be to your advantage at all using a shooting head. I don't know of any case that I fish those three species or any of the slam species that I fish a shooting head would be adequate, other than maybe some snook in some deep channels where there may be some snook or tarpon laid on the bottom that I'm not really sight casting for. That would be the only place that I could see maybe a shooting head might become handy. But your fly fishing skills need to be pretty good in order to be able to handle shooting heads. Shooting heads are certainly a good tool, but they really need to be in the hands of an experienced fly caster.
Well, now, it seems to me that from my experience in the salt, all three of these fish, as you said before, are on the move. And, if a pod of tarpon are coming at you, you might get two casts, but that might be it.
Well, I see a lot of tarpon laying up underneath the mangroves that are pretty stationary, but you're still going to have to make a precise cast, and the fly line's not going to be into the play at all. It's just going to be the leader, and that leader is the only thing that's going to touch down in front of them, and you're certainly not going to want that fly line to lay across them. And the other thing with a shooting head, it's sinking in the water so much. If you do have a school of fish, the other fish are going to bump into that fly line or see that fly line, and that's going to end it for the one you're trying to throw to. So I really don't see a place for the shooting head, but if he's going to be fishing with a guide, call that guide and ask the guide, what gear does he recommend, and so that he'll have it on hand. Because that guide may fish some deep water bonefish. There's places that in the wintertime that you can find bonefish in 10 or 15 feet of water off of Miami in the muds, that a shooting head certainly would probably be adequate. So he just needs to talk to his guide.
Yeah, let's get back to that game plan. We've talked about equipment now. We kind of know what we need there. Of course, there's going to be specific flies. We'll talk about that when we talk about each fish here in a minute. But if we're leaving the dock in the morning, what can I expect from you? I mean, what's the day going to be like as we start looking for fish?
Well, I want that tackle ready. While I'm preparing the boat, I want you to make sure you got your tackle prepared. We're going to talk about it the night before. And this is one of the nice things about the clients staying with me. We get to chat, during supper, and after supper we get to prepare a tackle for the next day to where it's ready to go and make a decision on what flies, what leaders, how long a leaders. I look at their equipment, set their equipment up the best that it can be set up for the conditions, and then maybe talk to them about what they're going to be presented with. the reason I want that tackle ready, because when I shut down, within 5 minutes of the time that I shut down, I have this 5 minute window, seems like, in that first 5 minutes, all of a sudden you see a fish. And if you're not prepared in that first 5 minutes for where I shut down at, and that 5 minutes is the time it takes me to get from where I shut down to where I get up onto the flat where I think the fish are going to be, or know the fish are going to be, or hope the fish are going to be. They're not always where you want them to be, but more than likely, you know, I've been fishing that particular area. I know the habitat of this fish, know when they're going to show up there. When I shut down, you need to be ready. You know, you need to get up as the angler. You need to be able to have your clean glasses on, or clean the glasses you got on. Have your cap on to shade your eyes, and have your fly rod out and stripping it into the basket or into the deck, whichever you prefer. I give customers the option of either one. Some people like a basket, some like to put it on the deck. And be ready, because it can happen right away. It can happen very quick from the time that you get there. We're going to talk about, beforehand, we're going to talk about the retrieve. We're going to talk about the cast, how close, how far away it needs to be from each species that we're targeting, and visually picking out the fish and casting to that fish, and not just flock shooting. Flock shooting is not something that works for any of those species. You want to be able to target that particular species. So those are things that I'm going to put in your mind before we even leave the dock. When we shut down to ease up onto the dock, while I'm getting on the platform to pull the boat up there, I'm going to be keying you in on what the layout of that area is. We've got a little swash here. Fish may be laying off. They're going to be facing you. The tide right now is coming this way. So when you make your cast, you know, your fly line is going to drift to your right or to your left. I'm going to key you in on that. And I think I may have mentioned to you before, I don't talk about feeder yards. I talk about fly line lengths. I get you to make a couple warm-up casts. When you make that cast, I'm going to look at how long of that cast is, and I'm going to say, is that your average cast? If you confirm with me that's your average cast, then that's one cast away. So when I see permit, bonefish, or tarpon, two cast away, then you know you've got twice your length of your cast to get ready. Three lengths away, you got a little bit more time. If it's within casting range, I'll say, you know, cast now, meaning that, you know, you got to make that 40-foot cast, that 50-foot cast, whatever your normal cast is. If I say 20 feet, 30 feet, 40 feet, 6 yards, 10 yards, or whatever, everybody's math is not the same in yardage, but you know where your cast is. Now I know where your cast is because I've seen it. That just accelerates things. That accelerates things that allow you to makes the difference between hooking and not hooking that fish. If I tell you that you got a bonefish one cast away, that means you need to cast. If I tell you got a bonefish at a cast and a half away, or two cast away, or permit, you know, that far away, then you know where to look. You know what the distance is that you're casting better than I do. But I've picked up on that now because you've showed me your cast. If you all of a sudden get an adrenaline surge, you usually shorten your cast. Most people don't overcast when they get an adrenaline surge because they speed up their cast, and that's when their cast comes apart. Are you there?
We're here. We're okay. Listening. So depending on the, of course, the type of fish that we're targeting, is going to be a little different technique, different presentation. Different
absolutely.
Flies. So you're gonna talk to them, say, hey, we're going up on a flat. I expect to see bonefish on this flat. You know, you've got your.
I'm gonna carry you through each step as we make that move across there. As we crawl up onto that flat, I'm gonna be probing you and just calmly preparing you for what I'm seeing and what I can, you know, what to expect on that flat. I've already been there before, and if I haven't been there before, then it's a crapshoot, so I'm going to take you to places where I've already been.
Fish, yeah.
On the days that I, you know, fish with myself or a friend, then I'll go scouting, but I'm going to take you to where I know the fish and what they should be doing there. We may be blindsided by anything at any time, and we prepare for that by just by being prepared. You know,
right.
That's what you have to do.
And so here, to get a grand slam, we're really dependent on the guide, knowing the area, having pre-scouted it, knowing where the fish are, and it just happens to be with weather, currents, and so forth, whether they're there that moment that you arrive.
Yeah, you can only target one fish at a time. You're not going to catch a grand slam with one cast, so you can only target one fish at a time.
Right.
And if it's a bonefish flat, you may find a tarpon, you may find a permit there. But if it's a bonefish flat, I'm probably going to find more bonefish there than anything else. I'm going to prepare you for that. But, you know, I'm also going to let you know that there's a possibility we'll see something else. If you see a fish that you think is one of those three species, if in doubt of whether it's that species or not, just cast. We'll sort it out later. The biggest mistake people make is not throwing at a bonefish or not throwing at a permit because they think it's something else like a barracuda or something, you know, something of that sort. If they see something, sometimes they'll catch something out of the corner eye. It looks like the species. Don't try to figure out what it is. Don't wait for me to evaluate what it is. Go ahead and cast. Once you make that cast, by the time your flies hit the water, I'll know what it is. And if it's a barracuda, I'm going to holler at you and say, stop it right now. Don't move the fly. And as soon as that fly goes above, the barracuda is going to go away. We'll strip it back in. And if you start stripping it, that barracuda is liable to take your fly. And we're just down one less fly. No big deal. But while we're tying that fly, we may have a shot at that fish that we're after. You know, I'm going to program you in a way that, yes, you can cast anything if you're in doubt of what it is. As soon as I verify it, you know, then just follow my instructions on what to do. The coot is the only fish that we're really worried about him giving us a problem, you know. A shark, possibly, but in most cases the shark isn't going to rush a fly that you're trying to lift out of the water. All of a sudden, it's not what you think it is. It's a barracuda, and you lift the rod up to take it out, and he hits a fly before it leaves the water, whereas a shark's not going to do that. So they're the only two fish that are going to really be able to cut us off, you know, cut our tippet, bite tippet. Those are the only two fish that are going to give us a problem. And it's just going to cause us to have to re-rig or get another rod out and strip it out, and that's the downtime that we don't want because we're already in the zone. You know, if I'm pulling that boat, we're in the zone.
Now, let's say we hit a bonefish flat, I take it from what you've said, the area that you fish, particularly the Keys down there, these fish could be around any corner. And I mean, by that, we could be on a bonefish flat and pull out, and just across a channel, there's a perfect spot for permit.
Well, when I'm coming upon that flat, I'm coming up off of the deeper water onto that flat. I am going across a little deeper water where you may find some larger tarpon that are following the edge. You may find permit working on that edge. And so you want to be prepared for that. And a lot of times I'll prepare you by saying, well, get your permit rod out, and we're going to cross this water. Well, we may be across that water in 5 minutes, and then I'll have you switch rods back out to your bonefish rod.
Okay.
You know, we're pushing up there because we may encounter those permit on the way up there and then switch back out, you know, moments later. I won't leave you standing there with a permit rod with a 15-pound bite tippet on there that when you put it in front of a bonefish, he's not going to want that fly when he sees that 15-pound tippet. So we do need to change that rod out so we can have like an 8-pound, you know, bite tippet on there so that we know that the bonefish, because the bonefish will and does shy off of that 15-pound tippet, whether it's fluorocarbon or not. Occasionally a bonefish just goes crazy and takes it on, takes one on a permit rig. But
yeah, I guess my point is that we're not going to necessarily be doing a lot of traveling in the boat, that these three fish are all in the general area, so we're not going to take them necessarily an hour boat ride to get from a permit area to a bonefish area.
Well, sometimes we do that only because we may be fishing an area where we're on the tail end of the tide, we're on the tail end of the peak period for that species, but that tide is doing the same thing 20 minutes, 30 minutes away from there, you know, in a different area, because the tides come from both ocean side and from the Gulf side, and so you can fish the same tide for a number of hours. You can fish that flood tide in a number of locations by moving in with the tide. You can fish that low income in a number of places. So in order to get to that, you may fish that place a little bit long because the fish are still coming across there. All of a sudden there's no fish. Time to pull up. Now the next good spot, you want to be a little bit ahead of them. You may have to run 20 or 30 minutes.
Okay.
Maybe even longer in some cases. I got a good fast boat that I get to these places with and fish those peak tides in a number of locations. It's not like you're just going to have one flat that you're going to fish one tide and then it's going to be over with. You can fish that same tide in a number of locations. So it does require some traveling, but we're traveling in the backcountry, traveling in calm water, and typically you're not going to get beat up in any of the areas that we fish because the routes of travel through the backcountry, you know, are known by the people who know the area, and we can travel protected water going and coming each and every day, no matter how bad the weather is, we can be in protected water.
Okay. Here's what I want to do, because we're getting short on time. We've talked about permit, tarpon, and bonefish, and you've slipped in some tips there on all those as we've gone through it. But I want you to quickly give, because, and I mean quickly, your best tip for each of those fish, the best thing that you could tell somebody about going after a permit, a tarpon, and a bonefish that's particular to that fish.
Well, the permit, in most all cases, it's a matter of putting that fly right on his nose. And when I say right on his nose, 6 inches isn't too close. it's a visual for him. One or two things are going to happen. You're going to send him to, you know, faraway places to where you won't see him again that day, or he's going to follow that fly to the bottom, and he's going to take that fly, you know, when it gets on the bottom. When that fly hits the bottom, if he hasn't already taken it at the moment it hits the bottom, then a slow movement of the fly, just a slow strip, you know, will usually get him to do it, and you'll feel him pick that fly up. With the bonefish, you can give him some lead time. He can come up onto the fly, and you can work the fly moving it. He'll track it and take it. And with the tarpon, actually, let me back up a second. You can also take permit with topwater flies, but the tarpon is going to be something that's subsurface or near the surface. I catch them on floating crabs a lot of times where the tarpon come up and take it right off the surface. Always keeping the fly above his level, at his level or above his level is probably the most important thing there.
Okay, great tips. So to sum that up, with permit, accuracy and timing seems to be the thing, because we need to get very close. Bonefish, we've got a little bit more leeway because they're moving across the flat and are less, I guess, susceptible to...
A lot of different scenarios with the bonefish, but that is the one thing that you can remember with the bonefish, that he will take a moving fly. He'll take it as... I move the fly as fast as the bonefish is moving. Whatever speed the bonefish is moving, that's how fast I move the fly. If he's not moving very fast, I don't move it very fast, but I move it at the speed he's doing. Always keeping it ahead of him, pretty much the same way with the tarpon.
Same with the tarpon, yeah. Good. Okay, good. And folks, obviously we didn't get into each of these species in depth today, but if you'd like to learn more about it, hey, listen to Earl's show on tarpon and Homo sassa tarpon. We get into very deep depth on the tarpon. We've got other shows on tarpon, bonefish, and permit in our archives, so be sure and check that out. Well, Earl, before we close out today, I'd like to have you maybe share a story about one of your more memorable Grand Slam days that you participated in, whether it's you or one of your clients, but kind of share with us what that experience might have been like.
Well, you know, Roger, there's a story from every trip you ever make, and the neat thing about what I do is you will see and witness something different every day of every trip you make, and that's what keeps me going back, and I think that's what keeps a lot of people going back. But one of my most memorable trips is back in the early time of when I was first trying to pursue these slams. Dr. Jay Walton, Dennis from Tallahassee, Florida, had fished with me for tarpon and fished with me quite a bit all over. And we had a trip to the Keys where we went out that day, not with the intention of doing a Grand Slam. A lot of times Grand Slams come without making an intention. But I knew it would be nice for him, and I knew it was something he hadn't done, and he would like to do it. And so right off the bat, we pulled up onto a flat. We pulled off a nice bonefish and you know, got a few high fives going, and I get back on the platform to pole, and immediately I see a stingray coming head-on at us, and telling behind that was a nice permit. And I said, and he's got a bonefish rod, of course, with a bonefish fly. And I said, Jay, you got a permit on that ray. Well, immediately he picked it up, made a proper cast, hooked up the fish. Next thing we know, we're two-thirds into a Grand Slam. We spent the rest of the day bypassing all the permit and all the bonefish we could probably caught, trying to find a tarpon. We couldn't find a tarpon of any size. We covered a lot of ground, a lot of mileage. Well, at the end of the day, he said, you know, I'm pretty happy. I'm happy that I got the permit on fly. And so we decided to go to supper. So we drive a marathon, and we're sitting there, and it's about 9:30. And I said, Jay, I said, what are we doing here? We're eating supper. Because it's dark don't mean we can't catch a tarpon. I said, I happen to know under the bridge there at Big Pine Key. And at that time, I was staying in the campground at Big Pine Key Fishing Lodge. And you idle out of the canal, and you're right up underneath the bridge. I said, there's a guy underneath that bridge every night that tells me the tarpon are all around him when he's trying to dip shrimp. Most of the time, they chase the shrimp into his net and tear a hole in his net, and he just curses them. I said, those tarpon are there. What are we doing here? The Grand Slam is something you have to do in a day's time. It's the day's not over till midnight. So we pay our bill, and we run out of the restaurant, drive back, jump in a boat, idle out in about 2 minutes at the end of the canal, and pull out, and sure enough, he's there. He's got his light underneath the bridge, and we pull up to him. He says, yeah, there's tarpon everywhere here. So we backed off away from him and started making casts, and we're throwing a shrimp fly, and they just would not look at that shrimp fly. And we got looking closer at what was going on, and we all of a sudden we see all these glass minnows, and these tarpon are chasing the glass minnows. They're not chasing the shrimp. immediately we switched out the fly. We had a Steve Abel had been putting a fly in his. Every time you bought a reel, you got a fly pattern that looked pretty much like a bait fish, you know, with that reel. And he just happened to have a new reel with that fly in it. Either he had it or I had it. But anyway, we put that fly on and made one cast. Next thing I know, we're hooked up to the tarpon. Looked at my watch, and it was 11:45. So it was just in a few moments before 12 o'clock, we landed that fish, and we had that grand slam. But it was one of those deals where, you know, we're not really looking for this, but I really wanted him to have that. It was really eating at me that we, you know, I had not gotten him that grand slam, because I wanted to do that for him on that trip, and I'll never forget that. And of course, to this day, he's got his grand slam plaque hanging up in his office that I ended up presenting him with. So that's one of the many ones, but we could go on all night with all the others.
Well, that's a good one to look forward to. Never give up. Never give up. Well, that's a great story to end the show with. It is time to wrap things up, but stick with me here, Earl, because we're going to give away the slam flies you've got, and we'll do that when we return from this commercial break. We'll also be giving away a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and a one-year subscription to Fly Fusion Magazine. So stick with us, and we'll be right back. Bristol Bay region of southwest Alaska is home to the largest runs of wild salmon on the planet and some of the best trophy rainbow trout fishing found anywhere. The Pebble Mine still remains a threat to the region, and 2 million acres of federal lands may be at risk. The entire fly fishing industry has united in this epic conservation battle. Anglers from across the country are joining the fight. Be one of them. Visit www.savebristolbay.org. SaveBristolBay.org, and there you'll learn more about how you can get involved. But just a quick reminder to everyone, before you leave the website tonight, please take a minute and give us your feedback about the show. You can find a link on our homepage in the section on tonight's show that says, "What did you think of this show?" Just click on that link and leave us your comments. We'd really appreciate it. Now it's time to give away our prizes. So the first prizes are given away based upon the drawings that we do from our database. And these are randomly selected from our registration database. If you didn't register for tonight's show yet, it's too late now, but be sure to do so for our next show, because you don't want to miss out on your chances to get some of these great prizes that we have. So the first one is for the one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers. And if you're not familiar with the Federation, go to fedflyfishers.org, fedflyfishers.org. It's a great organization to support, and there's a lot of educational benefits that you can get from associating with that organization. And they have some great conservation efforts going on as well. So our winner there is Pete Bates in Arizona. So congratulations, Pete, and if you already have a membership, we'll get that extended for you. But I know you'll enjoy being a member of the Federation. And now we'll do a drawing for the one-year subscription to Fly Fusion Magazine. Again, if you're unfamiliar with this magazine, get familiar. You can go to www.flyfusionmag.com, flyfusionmag.com, and learn more about this great magazine. And the winner there is Lloyd Berkey. Lloyd Berkey, and Lloyd is in Pennsylvania. So congratulations, Lloyd. Got some listeners all over the place tonight. So go ahead, and we'll contact you and get your information so that we can get you these great prizes. Now, Earl, what we do on this one is we pose a question, and the first person to answer it correctly will win your slam flies. Tell us a little bit about what's in those slam flies. What flies are we looking at there?
We've got some bonefish flies. We've got some permit flies, and we got some tarpon flies in there, all flies that are usable in the Florida Keys, and some of them can be usable in the Caribbean and Mexico and other areas where you have the species as well. These are flies that have proved themselves as being successful flies for me over the years.
And so we've got some of the ones you talked about. I suppose there's got to be some crabs in there somewhere.
Oh, yeah. These are all flies that I tie, these are flies that I'll tie myself, so they're going to have the same flies that I use if they were fishing with me.
Great, great. Okay, well, let's see if we can find a winner out there. So we didn't spend a lot of time talking about this, so this might be a little harder one for you guys to get, but we'll give it a shot here. There was a question about the moon phases, and Earl said there was one moon phase that he preferred. What was that moon phase? What do you think, Earl? You think they're going to get it?
Oh, yeah. I think there'll be somebody, I think somebody can pick up on that. You probably got some listeners out there that fish with me, and those are going to be the guys that's going to jump right on that. Cause they
well, I think we got a winner right away. Or this guy can read my mind. I'm not sure. He says new moon and then full moon. So I think he's got it. Does he have it there?
Yeah. He, you know, we were looking for the new moon as being my preference, but the two are certainly my preference because of the tides. But I think we've got a winner.
Okay, great. Well, then, Warren Davis, you just got that set of slam flies. So your next step, Warren, will be to book your plane ticket and arrange a guide trip with Earl so you can use them.
Yeah, we didn't tell him he's got to show up at my front door to get the
Yeah, there we go. There we go. Well, I'm sure he'll want to. So great, Warren. Be sure to it looks like you've already sent over your full information. So we'll have Earl send those flies off to you directly and enjoy them and catch a grand slam with them. That'd be great. And if you do, be sure to let us know so that we can let everybody know that that happened. So
send pictures.
Yeah, send pictures. Well, Earl, thanks again for being on the show. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, and hopefully one day we'll go fishing together and we can give me a shot at this grand slam. Something I haven't done, but I need to do.
Look forward to it, Roger.
Yeah, sounds good. Well, until next time, our next broadcast will be on January 6th, 7 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And on that show, we're going to interview Brian Chan, and our topic for the show will be Fly Fishing Trout Lakes, a Biologist's Point of View. Brian Chan is a professional fisheries biologist and has spent most of his life studying the insect life of trout lakes. Brian will share the secrets of what happens in that underwater world and how it will help you to catch more fish. So join us for that one on the 6th of January. We'd like to thank the Federation of Fly Fishers, Fly Fusion Magazine, Front Range Anglers, Housatonic River Outfitters, and Flats Time Charters for sponsoring our show tonight. If you think your company would benefit from sponsoring one of our shows, give us a call at 1-888-961-1115, extension 2, and we'll be happy to explain the options available to you. Don't forget to visit our website at askaboutflyfishing.com and make sure you're signed up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing.